Top Sport on SAFM.
So straight into the sports news we go. Let me give you that Banyana starting lineup for their match against Nigeria. Critical Olympic qualifier tonight at Loftus. Kalyn Swart in goal. A back four of Ramelepe, Makubela, Gamede and Dlamini. In the midfield, Jane is the captain. She's back in the side, of course. Mutlalo alongside her. Then playing wide is Khoale and Tesane. And up front, Khatlana and Siopusenwe. So that is the side there. We'll look at that game a little later on in the show. Then in terms of Sundowns, their starting lineup against Cape Town Spurs in the top versus bottom of the table clash. Ronwin Williams in goal. Then Mudal, Mashiko, Kekana, Mvala, Mokwena, Kulise, Maema, Zwane the captain, Ribeiro Costa and Shalulile. That is the Sundown side to take on Cape Town Spurs. I haven't been given the Cape Town Spurs lineup as yet. Then some cricket news. Protea stalwart Ayabonga Kaka is gearing up to reach yet another milestone, major milestone, during the Sri Lankan Women's One Day International Series, with her possibly set to make her 100th international appearance next week. It'll be a huge moment for the 31-year-old, who is currently on 97 caps, and should she play in all three ODIs, she'll make her 100th appearance in the third game at the JB Marks Oval in Potch next week, Wednesday. Although it won't be the milestone match, it will still be special if she plays in the opening game of the series as well, as it takes place on her home ground at Buffalo Park in East London this afternoon. Let me give you an update on that as well. It's raining at the moment. The players are off the park. South Africa posted 270 for 6 in their innings. The innings held together by a brilliant 116 at the top of the order from Tasman Brits. Laura Wolfart, the captain, made 41. Annika Bosch made 39. Sune Lus, 22. And Nadine de Klerk made 34 from just 22 balls with 5 fours and a 6. Amazing how she's able to come in and do that regularly. 2 wickets each for 3 bowlers, Ranasinghe, Kumari and Dilhari. In reply, Sri Lankan women 23 without loss after 1 ball short of 7 overs. The openers Gunaratne and Atapattu at the wicket, 23 without loss, chasing 271 to win, needing a further 248 from 43 overs and 1 ball. But as I say, they're off the park at the moment, so no action happening there currently. Elsewhere in cricket, Chennai Super Kings all-rounder Ravindra Jadeja became the first player with at least 100 catches, 1,000 runs, and 100 wickets in the IPL during their 7-wicket win over KKR or Kolkata Knight Riders yesterday. Jadeja took 2 catches to reach the 100 mark and also had 3 wickets in his first 8 balls to be named player of the match. He's taken 156 wickets and made 2,776 runs in the IPL. The 35-year-old joins Virat Kohli on 110, Suresh Raina 109, Karan Pollard 103 and Rohit Sharma 100 for the most catches by a fielder in the IPL. In soccer news, SABC Sport has established that Morocco Swallows have agreed in principle to move their DStv Premiership fixture next week against Sundowns to be played a day earlier in order to accommodate the CAF schedule. It is understood that talks between the two Premier Soccer League top-flight clubs began several days ago, with the Brazilians wanting to be on the front foot should they qualify for the semi-finals of the Champions League. Sundowns did eventually go past Yanga of Tanzania via penalties in their second leg clash at Loftus and will now face Esperance de Tunis, or the blood and gold of Tunisia, on the weekend of the 19th of April for the first leg and a week later for the return fixture. In the meantime, the Confederation of African Football has thanked the South African Broadcasting Corporation for playing a leading role in bringing its competitions to the millions of South African households. CAF head of TV and acting director of competitions, Lukolo September, says the SABC has helped to change the narrative in South Africa that African football doesn't have commercial value. The SABC recently broadcast the 2023 AFCON tournament, which broke some commercial and broadcast and digital records.
I think these are exciting times for African football. These are exciting times for the future of football in our continent. And I think there's something that the AFCON has done in really making us as Africans to believe in the product that we have. And now this is kind of infiltrating and getting into the club football space. I think we must be proud as African people because football is now a product. And the people are responding to a product, coming to the stadiums, enjoying it, and the broadcasters supporting it. And I must thank the SABC. For the role it's playing at the moment. I know in the past SABC has had a lot of bad press from people about how it looks at sport, how it looks at football. But, you know, everything is about leadership. I mean, now you've got a group CEO like Nomsa who understands things, who understands results, who's brought, I hope, will bring a culture of the results culture, but also of the value of sport, not only as a social cohesion, but in bringing a culture of excellence.
When CAF President Patrice Motsepe came into office in 2021, he was met with a TV blackout of all the CAF competitions in sub-Saharan Africa in particular, as the continental football body was embroiled in a legal dispute with its former broadcast and commercial rights partner, Lagardère Sport. This forced multitudes of football fans on the continent to resort to watching CAF competitions via streaming on illegal links. September recalls visiting 30 countries to ensure that African football is beamed live on free-to-air channels.
I mean, I remember when we arrived at CAF, you know, people could not watch Champions League in South Africa, could not watch qualifiers in South Africa. I mean, one of the first things that Dr. Motsepe told me was we have to make football accessible in Africa. Last year, I probably went to over 30 African countries trying to secure and finalize deals on the free-to-air and talking to a number of people. For the first time, AFCON was in over 40 free-to-air stations in Africa. Over 40 countries, free-to-air, watched AFCON. Now, the entire continent had access, be it free-to-air or pay TV. So, he had promised that every African must have access to football. Today, if you are in South Africa, all 60 million people today had a choice to watch football. And this is something that is beautiful. If you have a leader who's intentional, okay, he drives us a little bit too hard sometimes, but he wants results. And results is not necessarily what is happening on the field. It's good what is happening on the field, but it's the image of African football. It's the results that is happening in the commercial people coming on board in African football, but also Africans being able to watch their game.
Elsewhere, Al Nassr forward Cristiano Ronaldo was sent off for elbowing an opponent during his side's 2-1 Saudi Super Cup semi-final defeat by Al Hilal. Ronaldo was shown a straight red card on 86 minutes after appearing to swing his elbow twice into the chest of Ali Al Bulahi, who fell to the floor. In tennis news, Sumit Nagal of India won his first ever ATP Masters 1000 series match when he defeated Matteo Arnoldi of Italy in 3 sets, 5-7, 6-2, 6-4, at the Monte Carlo Masters. The 26-year-old Nagal, ranked 95th, will now play Holger Rune in the second round. In netball news, World Netball has banned transgender women from competing in women's international competitions. The ban comes in with immediate effect after the global governing body released a new participation and inclusion policy on Monday. World Netball said that after a lengthy consultation process, it had determined international women's netball was a gender-affected activity. Finally, rugby news. Negotiations between stakeholders have cleared a path for a 16-team Club World Cup to bring the best sides from the Northern and Southern Hemispheres together starting in 2028. Making room for the quadrennial tournament will require calendar changes to leagues in Europe and Australasia, but the desire to get it going means adjustments to carve out a 4-week June window had been agreed, reports said. Qualification would be meritocratic, the report said, meaning that some major rugby-playing nations could be unrepresented if their teams were not performing well. For the best digital experience, go to our new website, www.sabcsport.com, for all your breaking news, match data, live games and competitions. Your question for tonight, which country completes this list? I'm talking soccer. I'm giving you the countries in order. I want to know which country completes this list and why. Nigeria, Burundi, Botswana, Tunisia, Zambia, and one other. Nigeria, Burundi, Botswana, Tunisia, Zambia, and one other country. Who is that country and why? Why does that country complete that particular list? If you know the answer, 0860002032 or 0614104107 for text messages or voice notes. Please include your name. Please keep your messages short. You can X me at SAFM, you can X me at Memory Mentalist, or you can X the station at SAFM Radio if you want to congratulate us on 250 shows. We've been going since the 3rd of April last year, so still going strong. Tonight is show number 250 as we try and bring you the very, very best of sports. So stay tuned. We'll be talking soccer. We'll be previewing the Champions League. Also keeping you up to date with what's happening in the match between Cape Town Spurs and Sundowns, and also critically what's happening at Loftus, where Banyana Banyana are chasing their Olympic dreams against the Super Eagles of Nigeria, but they trail 1-0 from the first leg, so it's going to be interesting to see whether South Africa can start on the front foot. We'll keep you updated throughout the show. To our question again before we go to our first interview, which country completes this list? Nigeria, Burundi, Botswana, Tunisia, Zambia, and one other country. I will tell you, we've had two text messages in tonight. I haven't listened to the voice notes as yet. Those that have come in, we'll play those later in the show. But I can tell you that two messages have come in and they both have the correct answer. So, Peter, you are absolutely right with your country, but you haven't told me why. And Masikole, I'm still struggling with the pronunciation of your name, our regular listener in Soshanguve, great to hear from you again. You've got the country right as well. So both of you are spot on with your countries. But what I want to know from you is, why did you say the country you said? Everybody else, I'm not going to tell you what the countries were. I'm going to leave it open and give you a chance to see if you know the answer. But two listeners have already got the correct country. The question again, which country completes this list? I'm talking soccer, and I'm giving you the list in order. Nigeria, Burundi, Botswana, Tunisia, Zambia, and one other country. What country are we talking about? If you know the answer, get hold of us. Let's talk soccer now. Big night for many, many different reasons. It's a big night for me because my team are at Hillsborough tonight playing Sheffield Wednesday in a crucial match. We won't talk about that. We're talking about Banyana. They're at Loftus tonight to try and reverse a 1-0 deficit from the first leg. Sundowns are playing their top versus bottom of the table clash at the moment in Cape Town. It's about to kick off. And of course, there's European soccer. Plenty of matches taking place and key ones at that. Arsenal against Bayern Munich and Real Madrid against Manchester City. We're going to try and preview as many of those as possible with Soccer Laduma international journalist and a man fast making his name as an excellent soccer reporter and very, very knowledgeable on so many different aspects of the game. Kamohelo Motechwane, what a pleasure to talk to you again tonight. Good evening.
Good evening to you and your listeners, Mr. Abramson. I appreciate the kind words. It's a pleasure to be on your show once again. Thank you.
Great pleasure. I believe you're at Loftus at the moment. So if that is the case, what is the atmosphere like and what is the crowd size like in terms of being the 12th player effectively tonight for Banyana?
Yeah. You know, it's not a packed Loftus festival, but I think the numbers that have arrived to support Banyana are definitely making their voices heard. You know, they just walked onto the pitch right now for kickoff. So, yeah, I think they're going to play their part in a big way. The supporters that are here to support the African champions. On their quest to Paris 2024.
So having a look at the team that's been announced, it looks fairly strong in terms of the personnel available, also a fairly strong bench that Coach Dez has available. Do you think that with the return of Refilwe Jane in the midfield captaining the side, of course, giving her leadership expertise, you've got Jermaine Posenwe, who breaks all sorts of records up front with Khatlana, a fairly strong defence as well, Ramalepe on the right-hand side. And the side looks strong in various positions. Do you think it's critical for Banyana to start well tonight?
Yeah, it's going to be very, very imperative, you know, for the team to start well. As you alluded to, Rufila Jane, her return to the team is going to be imperative, and is going to be the culminating factor in whether we win or lose. And she's a top player, you know, and we saw how much we missed her when she went down during the World Cup, you know. So yeah, I think it's a very strong team. Much of that starting 11 played at the World Cup in New Zealand and Australia. So away goals don't count, fortunately for South Africa. But I think they should be getting the job done. Nigeria, of course, record African champions, but Desiree Ellis knows how to get the job done, I think.
So just to clear that up, because there's been a lot of confusion, people have been messaging me throughout the day about the away goal situation. As you say, away goals don't count. So just clarify for us, what would happen if Banyana win this match 1-0, which would mean effectively it would be 1-1 on aggregate? Is it straight to penalties? Is there extra time? How does it work?
Yes. An extra time would ensue, and then essentially, yeah, penalties if nobody goes through nobody scores during the last 30 minutes. So yeah, that's essentially how the game will play out. Hopefully, we do not need to have to go through those roller coaster of emotions as South Africans and get the job done within the 90 minutes. You know, it's a tough ask, but yeah, it's very doable in my opinion.
Let me ask you another question that I've been asked, and I wasn't 100% sure the answer, but I thought, you know, while we're chatting to you, I'm sure you will know it or be able to find it out for us. In terms of this particular double leg between Nigeria and South Africa, direct shootout, the winner goes to the Olympics, the loser doesn't. How is it determined that Nigeria would play their home leg first? Was that according to how qualification worked out, or was there a coin toss, or what happened that South Africa have got the advantage of playing the home leg second?
I would like to assume that it's the fact that, you know, although we missed out on the last Olympics, we are the reigning African champion. So I guess if we're going by rank and superiority within the team, that will be my educated assumption as to why we were allotted the first leg away, and then we get the return leg at home. It makes the most logical sense.
Right.
Yeah, you know, as champions we get preference. So yeah, once I get a definitive answer for sure, I'll be sure to let you know though.
Okay, perfect. It's just a question I've been asked, and I must be honest, I didn't know exactly the answer. I assumed it was something to do with seedings, but I wasn't 100% sure if it was a coin toss or if there was a seeding situation coming in. Also, there was rugby this weekend. The Bulls played at Loftus. They won 59-19 on the weekend. So I want to ask you, what does the pitch look like? Is it in decent condition after that rugby match, and particularly after all the rain that they've had? What's the surface looking like tonight?
Yeah. So Pretoria has been seeing heavy showers over the past couple of days, but the pitch looks immaculate. I don't want to lie, Mr. Abramson. You couldn't tell that there's been a lot of rain and an 80-minute rugby match that was played just a couple of days ago. So yeah, it looks fantastic, and you know, world class pitches for some of the best teams on the continent. They deserve to be playing on quality pitches, you know, and in a quality stadium. And I'm glad SAFO were able to organize Such a beautiful venue and such beautiful conditions for the champions of Africa.
And the weather has remarkably cleared as the day went on. It just got clearer and clearer, so it augurs well, I suppose, for a good match. I'm just looking at television pictures from the ground. Looks as if there are quite a few people in the main stand on the western side of the stadium, not as many around the rest of the ground. What would you put the crowd at the moment?
If we're saying that Loftus is about 50K, I'd say there is about maybe just about 20K people here, just about. Okay. Yeah. So the other, like as you said, the western stand is the one that's more packed. The viewers at home obviously can't see that side. What they can see are the Nigerian supporters, and they aren't that many. But on where we have the media are and where everybody else is, yeah, this is definitely numbers this way.
What does your gut feel tell you about tonight? Such a crucial game for the country, as you say, WAFCON champions that we're talking about, champions on the continent. To have them at the Olympics would be amazing, but effectively a draw is good enough for the Super Eagles.
Yeah. The pressure is on South Africa, essentially. But, you know, I don't want to, not to bash our national team either, men's national team either, but, you know, with Banyana, it's much... You know the superiority. They've been over the last couple of years under Desiree Ellis. They've been under high pressure situations. You know, they've seen it all: Olympics, World Cups, knockout stages of World Cups. You know, hostile WAFCON final environments. You know what I mean? And they've seen it all, and they've made it through those, and they've made it through those conditions. So, at home on a perfect pitch and in a boisterous, you know, Loftus crowd, I don't see it going any other way. But a Banyana win. Excuse my bias, but yeah, you know, we have quality players. A lot of the team made it to the knockout stages of the World Cup, so they're playing. And I think that although they lost in Abuja, as you'd expect, you know, being the away team, I think today they should be getting the business done. But yeah, like we said, Nigeria is a strong team. It's a strong team and have quality players that play across the world. I said Ashwana, these are top players. So yeah, they should not be taken lightly. But you know, I believe in the girls.
I know you're a man who keeps his eye on the pulse. I can tell you they've just kicked off at Loftus, so South Africa playing in their familiar yellow colours against the Nigerians tonight. We'll let you know if any goals do happen to go in there. Just before we get to tonight's Champions League action, just a couple of other pointers on international football that I'd like to ask you about. That came up yesterday. We heard the news that Everton were going to be docked two further points in addition to the points that have already been docked this season. And the Cristiano Ronaldo incident last night. Just want to get your take on each of those.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate that these lower Premier League clubs are not able to spend the same way that the bigger sides are. We know with FFP and how it works, it's very delicate how teams definitely manage their spending. But yeah, it's just a shame. The likes of Nottingham Forest and Everton have to find a way of being competitive, and that's essentially buying through the market. But yeah, because they don't generate that much money from a commercial standpoint, it's quite difficult for them to be in that range. To be in that range of FFP, you know, eligibility. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. It's a shame because Everton are actually a good team under Sean Dyche. You know what I mean? So I'm happy to see them play, but yeah, it just made their job a whole lot tougher. As far as staying in the Premier League is concerned. And then Ronaldo. I don't know. Ever since he's gone to Saudi Arabia, he seems a bit more volatile. You know what I mean? Like very animated. You know, he's always been a player that's shown a lot of emotion, but now it seems to be coming out in a kind of a different way, you know, in an unpleasant way, you know, and it's a shame, you know, seeing arguably one of the greatest players ever do, you know, for all the goals that he scored and he's still scoring in Saudi Arabia. It's a shame that, you know, he behaves in this way towards officials and stuff. So, yeah, it's a shame. Both situations are unfortunate. But yeah, I think definitely in his case, like, he definitely needs to rein it in a bit because he's the captain at the end of the day, and he's the poster boy for the Saudi Pro League. And, you know, it's not a good look when your most marquee player is kind of, you know, undermining the officials and kind of what happens in the league. So he definitely needs to rein it in my opinion. But yeah, that's just my general feel on it.
All right, let's move to the international setup, particularly tonight. Champions League action, a place in the semi-finals up for grabs. Two matches, of course, tomorrow night as well. But tonight it's all about the English clubs, effectively. Arsenal and Man City are involved in a terrific three-way contest for the league title, just 1 point separating themselves and Liverpool, and very, very tight. All teams have played 31 matches, so that's going to be a thrill-a-minute run-in. But Arsenal tonight hosting Bayern Munich, Manchester City at Real Madrid. Key matches, lots of revenge matches. The sides have played each other a number of times before. Just give us your take on the matches and what we can look out for.
Yeah, starting with Real Madrid and Man City. Obviously, a repeat of the quarterfinal of 21-22 and last season semifinal. So there's quite a lot of recent history there, and I guess animus in a way. Carlo Ancelotti and Pep Guardiola will have sussed each other out pretty well at this stage, you know. And, you know, I'm going to give Real Madrid the slight advantage. I know City have been imperious in the league, but for as good as they've been, I feel like they're quite leaky at the back for as good as they are, you know. I think this Palace game this past weekend, you know, the goals they conceded were quite sloppy, in my opinion. And, you know, these are things that I think Real Madrid could take advantage of, you know. Rudiger and whoever will partner him, you know, they have pacey centre-backs, essentially. So when Haaland doesn't really have space to run into behind or have centre-backs that can kind of track with him, he becomes very ineffective in a way. You know, we see the way he played against Arsenal, and I think the Real Madrid centre-backs have a similar sort of attributes. I read today that Florentino Perez requested that the stadium be closed, so I think that Santiago Bernabeu atmosphere is going to be insane. So, yeah, it's going to be very hard for, in my opinion, for City to get a result. But if a team were to go to Bernabeu and get it, it would be City. But I'd give Real Madrid a slight advantage. With regards to Arsenal and Bayern, that's an even closer one to call because, you know, for as good as Arsenal have been in the league and for as bad as Bayern have been in the Bundesliga, this is the Champions League, and tournament football is a totally different proposition. And, you know, the history of the competition always shines through for these clubs, especially when you speak about the likes of Real Madrid and Bayern Munich. So, yeah, you know, for as bad of a time they're having in the league, they'll be more than ready to be up for the game in North London, especially Harry Kane. You know, he has a tremendous record against Arsenal, especially at the Emirates. You know, he just has a knack of scoring whenever penalties, brilliant strikes, whatever you name it, he'll be there. And I'm sure against Bayern, he'll be looking to continue that streak. But this is a different Arsenal team. This is not the Arsenal team that lost 10-2 in aggregate in their last time in the Champions League. You know, they seem more rigid at the back. They seem like they have a different mentality, you know. And the ability to keep clean sheets is a testament to that. They have the best defensive record in the Premier League. And I think that, you know, if if there's a time for that to be brought to the fore, it'll be tonight. So I definitely, it's hard to call, but I'll give Arsenal also the slight advantage. So a Spanish win, a La Liga win, and then one Premier League win tonight, in my opinion.
It's fascinating. We'll see how that all plays out. Just finally, if we look tomorrow night's matches, of course, Atletico Madrid against Borussia Dortmund and PSG against Barcelona, which means, effectively, if you look at the eight sides who've made it through, two from England, three from Spain, you've got PSG from France, of course, and two German sides. So only really four countries represented in the last eight. No Italian sides, for example. Some of the other big powerhouses on the continent not represented at all. And just four countries providing the eight quarterfinals. What do you put that down to?
Yeah, you know, these leagues generally produce the best quality teams, the best quality players. They just have a knack of winning all the biggest trophies. You know, it's very rarely where you hear Eredivisie side do well or a team from Portugal doing well in the Champions League, or, you know what I mean, or these smaller leagues, I'd say. So I guess the tradition of being prominent in the Champions League is something that shines through and is becoming, and the gap, in my opinion, is getting bigger and bigger, you know. The teams that spend a lot and that have been traditionally the bigger teams are making that gap even bigger, because, as you alluded to, these are teams outside of Arsenal, and I guess, but I'd say, yeah, outside of Arsenal, these are teams that are generally in the latter stage of the Champions League, you know. And yeah, for me, I don't know if it's a good thing for football, but I guess it is. I guess it is what it is, you know. These five leagues, the Ligue 1, the Bundesliga, Premier League, and La Liga, essentially, they have a monopoly on European football. And I guess you throw Serie A, although ever since the Calciopoli scandal in the mid-2000s, Serie A teams haven't really been that good. But I definitely think that, you know, it'll be this way. It'll continue to be this way. I don't know. UEFA needs to do something to equalize the playing field, in my opinion. But yeah, traditionally, I just think it's just a matter of history and just being able to produce teams that know how to do well in these competitions, for sure.
Okay, let me ask you a question just finally. It doesn't have a right answer. So, I mean, it doesn't have a wrong answer, rather. So all you can do is be right. You don't need to give me an explanation, just on gut feel, because I know your gut feel is better than most. In the Premier League in England, who wins it out of the three?
Arsenal.
Okay.
Arsenal. I'll give an explanation. I know you didn't ask one, but just to clarify, I think although they have the tougher run of fixtures, just the fact that they've been able to show a versatility in how to win games. You know, they don't always have to play pretty. They don't always have to play some free flowing stuff. They can grind out results. You know, we saw against Man City, they left a draw. They left with a draw. And although they came out in the media and said, you know what, like, we were gunning for a win, I think they would have been pleased with a draw at the Etihad, you know. They're the only team to have beaten their respective rivals. So they've beaten City, they've beaten Liverpool at home. None of the other teams have been able to beat Arsenal this season. So in my opinion, and just looking at the way the season's going, you know, I put my money on Arsenal, of course. You never know with City. That would be the team I think would rival Arsenal to the championship, and the team I think would definitely, wouldn't be a surprise if they made it four consecutive Premier Leagues in a row.
All right, I'm making notes of the answers you're giving me, and then I'm sure you're going to get some of them right. Then just finally, in terms of the championship, the league that I'm most interested in, who goes up automatically of Leicester, Leeds and Ipswich? Because that's also a terrific three-way battle at the top of the league.
Yeah, I'd say that's even tougher to call, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, Southampton have been impressive of late. But I'd like to think, if I'd had to put my gut feeling on it, I'd say Leicester and Leeds. Just Leeds because, yeah, Daniel Farke, he knows,
yes,
he knows the Premier League, he knows the Championship. Yeah, he's built up quite a youthful side that's playing well. Leicester have quality, so Premier League level quality. So I think, yeah, those would be the two teams. And then hopefully for you, Norwich are able to win the playoffs.
Well, they've first got to get there, because I would also say Leicester and Leeds, by the way, so I'm totally in agreement with you. All right, final question, key one. Who wins tonight at Hillsborough? Sheffield Wednesday, second from bottom in the table against Norwich, chasing that sixth spot in their promotion stakes. That's a game I'm fascinated by. What does your gut feel tell you about that?
I'd say Norwich, of course.
They're
the higher team, and I want to be back on the show, Mr. Abrams. So I'll go
first. You will.
But yeah, when they aren't in good form, they haven't been in good form ever since they've been promoted. So it's quite difficult for them to I don't see them winning the game, essentially.
All right, thank you so much for that. Just an update at Loftus. Is it still 0-0?
Yes, still 0-0. Still 0-0 at Loftus. But yeah, Banyana definitely the most threatening.
Fantastic. Great to hear that. Thanks so much, as always, for your contributions on our show. We really do appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the football. Let's hope it's a good night for Banyana Banyana. Kamohelo Motechwane, Soccer Loduma international journalist, showing us just why he's so highly respected in the industry. Thank you again for your contributions on
CFM. We are on the money on Top Sport with Michael Abramson.
Lots of messages coming in, lots of interesting messages. Mayibuya, I thought you were my friend. You congratulated us for our 250th edition, and then you say, go Sheffield Wednesday tonight. Not impressed at all with you, sir. Only joking. We'll see how things develop in that regard. The question again for tonight, which country completes this list? Nigeria, Burundi, Botswana, Tunisia, Zambia, and one other. Who is that other country? Some of you have got it right. I'm still waiting for the correct explanation, though, and some of you are suggesting wrong answers, but we'll get to that in a moment. Let's talk rugby now. In the world of elite development sport, we have, of course, our InterVarsity competition, the Varsity Cup, and a man who knows more about it than most is the former Blitzbok and Lions player, also part of the UJ Varsity Cup coaching staff, and a man I've worked with before in terms of commentary, Mac Messina. Great to have you back on the show. Good evening.
Hey, Mike, how are you, brother?
Wonderful. I miss working with you these days. I don't do much rugby commentary these days.
But yeah, we must get back again and do it, man.
That'll be great. You sound in very good spirits. Obviously, a great result for UJ on the weekend. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, man. Look, it's a very good tournament to start with if you're talking about Varsity Cup. I mean, you are right. I mean, your line of saying that, you know, we're just trying to get the guys, elite young players, you know, to try and see if they can make it right up on top. You really just fought on there. But then again, there's lots that is happening there. I mean, this tournament started more than, if I'm not mistaken, 10 years back. And obviously, when it started, it was more of like an excitement thing for the students and all that stuff. And I think it has improved so much if you're looking at it. The product itself now is just so amazing because a lot of the players that have came through that tournament, some of them, they go all the way, you know, just to play for the Springbok team. I mean, the likes of Mbongi Bonandi, just to give you the few, they've started, you know, playing the Varsity Cup and all that stuff. And then if you look at all the other universities as well, where they started very slowly, they really just put on so much effort into the coaching stuff, you know, the structures and all that stuff. Hence, if you're looking at the universities now at this stage, you really just do get really good coaches, you know, that are capable of coaching even the professional team or even the national team.
You mentioned the fact that there are players who go on and go on to greatness effectively in the sport. But is the Varsity Cup then an opportunity for young players who maybe have not played the game much before to test their skills and maybe unearth some gems going forward, and players who have the opportunity to play in a competitive competition without maybe the huge stresses of playing big rugby going forward, but still a chance to, you know, plant the seeds for a career that could be successful?
Yeah, look, as I was saying that earlier on when the competition started, you could see that, you know, it was going to go bigger and bigger. Like, I'll give you an example. The players that you'll probably see playing in a Varsity Cup senior team, it's the players that have been probably in the system for 4 to 3 years, just being worked on in order for them just to be ready to play in the Varsity Cup, you know, senior team. So there's another competition as well that is called Young Guns, where it's the under-20 competition that has been played amongst the university. So you start identifying from there, but you can even go further because some of the players, they do get recruited from all these tournaments that are taking place in all over the country, you know, the North, West, South, you know, there's Valdeclave that is coming, there's Easter Festival that really just took place last week. So all those players that are being scouted purely because, you know, they need to try, you know, just align themselves in order for them just to play for the university and then, of course, and make sure that they study. Because part of this Varsity Cup thing, players must make sure that they study and then they pass. Because once you fail, then you can't have those players in your squad. So it's a very, you know, critical point of the tournament and development of the players. And Varsity Cup, why I like it, it's not about actually playing rugby. It's about really pushing the education side as well from the player's side. And then probably one of the biggest things, it's about us as coaches to really try our best, you know, in order for us, you know, to try and improve and moving on to the other so-called, you know, the challenges in life when we talk about rugby and all the stuff and coaching. So it's actually tough for everyone else, even the managers. Even if you are a team manager, you do get tested because the team travels and the amount of traveling, it's a very hectic. And you talk about the SNC, your fitness person. They also really just need to make sure that they get the players for those two and a half months to be ready and make sure that by the time the tournament really starts, you know, the players are ready and all the stuff. And there's technical stuff as well that it's been included now. So basically, if you look at Varsity Cup, it's more of like a semi-professional, tournament where the players are not really get paid big money, but they get paid to actually study, if you understand what I'm trying to say, a little bit of a contract, plus the coaching stuff and all that stuff. So it's brilliant. I mean, imagine if all the sporting, you know, codes will be like that. But rugby really just took a very big step by doing that, you know, a couple of years back. And then one thing that I really enjoyed is to see the so-called universities that were not that strong in terms of rugby, but they've put on like great resources. Hence, you see them now really, you know, doing very well in this competition and make sure that, you know, they move the world, you know. Everyone is talking about those universities now at this stage.
Mac, I'm very interested to hear what you say about the scouting systems in place at the school festivals and various other areas to try and find players to join the various universities, maybe get some sort of scholarship or some sort of supporting grant. So how widely cast are the nets? Is it a case of you hear about a player and a representative from the university goes and watches that player at school? Or is it sort of a network that goes around, or is it just watching at the big rugby festivals to see players that you can potentially identify or can strengthen the team? Just explain how the process works.
Yeah, I think it's pretty basic. We go there and literally watch the players play. One of the nicest thing about the school rugby is that your first team can actually start playing at 1 o'clock or 12 o'clock. It depends sometimes. You know, by the time it's late in the afternoon, you would have gone to maybe in a game where Cairns is playing against St. John's. You're there, you're watching the first team play, you kind of understand the players that are there. And then the good thing about that, we even go a little bit further because we really just track these players from when they're doing Standard 9. I think it's grade 11 in this new term.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
You're right.
Yeah, so by the time they're there, and then some of them, we watch them while they're still playing under 16 at school until they finish matric and all that stuff. So because we kind of really understand what is needed. And then some of them as well, we even talk to their schools to make sure that they pass well, because if they can't pass well, they're not going to be able just to be accepted at any university. So by the time they finish matric, we've got a little bit of some history about those players, where who is he, where does he stay, whether he's good in maths or in English and all that stuff, how can you get him to UJ and all that stuff. Apart from that, you know, that in terms of developing the player, in terms of rugby and his knowledge of the game and all that stuff, I mean, that's probably an easy part, if I can be really honest with you. But the difficult part is to make sure that they still do well at school. By the time, you know, they come to UJ, now they're getting into another different program. Because remember, the type of rugby that has been played out of university and the ones that you play at school is totally different, because it's totally different conditioning and all that stuff. And it's totally coaching, if you understand, you know, the way the game has been played, the risk factor and the non-risk factor. And then they get brought onto that system. Now they train again. By the time the season starts, the season actually starts very early. Most of the people are not really aware that by October, November, you know, late in December, there's still programs that are running. Guys go home because, you know, it's Christmas and all that stuff. By the time it's January, the first week of Jan, everyone is back in action. Coaches are ready, you know, they're putting on all those programs and the players have been coached, they've been prepared to be ready for the tournament that starts normally, if I'm not mistaken, the end of Feb. So you really understand that, you know, there's no breaking and just all that stuff. On top of that, the players still need to go onto the orientation week, you know, Mike, where it's some of them, it's the first time that are there in university. Some of them, they'll be staying at home when they were still at school. Now you got to bring them back. They got to stay at rest. They got to get used to that so-called grow up as quickly as possible, because now they're all by themselves. There's no mommy, there's no daddy. They need, so there's a lot that is actually happening until they play in the first team, until they're doing their third, fourth year, and then they go, until some of the unions, they really identify them after they finish playing Varsity Cup, you know, where they can go to a bigger union, like the Lions can take a few, or sometimes they can go to a smaller union, like the Falcons, like the Leopards and all that stuff, where they can further their rugby at the same time, knowing very well that they've got something, the degree or a diploma when they finish their sport playing for Varsity Cup.
Mac, it sounds like from what you're telling me that your job is quite involved. It's not only a matter of coaching the team or preparing them for match day or sitting during training sessions and working out particular moves. But as you say, there's scouting elements, there's identification elements, there are all sorts of things involved. Are you enjoying the challenge that this particular role gives you? And how long do you see yourself continuing in it?
I've been enjoying it. You know, this is like last now, just talking to you now, we're back at it because Varsity Cup, obviously, we're not playing in the semifinals as UJ, but we're back at it tonight as a club. I'm from practice now, you can imagine. So club rugby is starting. It's going to go all the way until October or so, if I'm not mistaken. So look, it's just our life. And sometimes it's good to see these players just come in as the youngster, where you see a player who came in at UJ as a 19-year-old, now he's leaving university. He's 23 or he's 24 years old and he's got a degree and he's probably playing in one of the top teams. Some of them, a lot of them from UJ, they went in to play the Springbok Sevens, which we're very happy about that. And there's a whole lot of things that is happening. So it's a very good thing. It's fulfilling if you're really passionate about it. But if you're not, you're going to really give up very easy because we do have challenges as the coaches. Some of the kids' changes, you know, you'll think that you've got the right one. 3, 4, 5 months later, everything changes because they see, you know, the lights from Joburg and all that stuff. So there's a whole lot of challenges, and there's parents that are getting involved because now they're not used to be his kid always being picked, because sometimes if you do that, they feel as if, you know, you are undermining his kid and all that stuff. Well, we really try just to keep it as professional as possible. It's all about the performance of the players because we're trying just to get to the point where it's like elite, like you are saying. It's all about high performance, you know. If the player is not performing, you know he's not going to play. But then again, if you look at the history sometimes of the other schools where they really play some other players where they know that they're not good enough, and all of a sudden they come in here into this system, they see that there's other, even better players than them that can perform in a very high pressured situation, because there's so much pressure to these guys. And look, there's so much pressure to us as well as coaches.
Right.
There's so much pressure to them as well to pass and play rugby, because it's quite hectic, if you ask me.
Absolutely. Mac, it's lovely to hear your passion. I can hear it in your voice. And because I know you, because we've worked together a number of times, I can sense that you're really enjoying it. Thanks so much for this insight into Varsity Cup. We'll have you back on the show and maybe chat a little bit more as the season develops and as you share some more stories with us. But great to have you on the show. Best of luck with everything that is in the near future. And look forward to chatting to you again.
Thanks, brother. Chat to you later.
All right. Super. Mac Messina talking rugby and Varsity Cup specifically on Top Sport tonight.
Top Sport with Michael Abramson.
Prince and Ndiweni, our Formula One correspondent. Great race as far as the Red Bull team are concerned.
Signature Red Bull, as they should at their home race. It's Honda's home race. It was absolutely... But the track brought us the unpredictability that we want. The abrasiveness of the track, the speed of the track, and how it evolved from mid, sort of coolish and wet conditions to dry and hotter. That threw a curveball in for a lot of the teams. And Ferrari handled it well with both their drivers. Sainz, excellent. Charles Leclerc, also equally as impressive driver of the day because of how he took charge of strategy and went for the one stop, and it worked out for him, and he came away with a fourth place.
Top Sport on SAFM.
Right, let me give you some scores before we get to the text messages that have come through. It's still raining in East London. Looks as if that match might be called off. I don't know. It's still premature. But it is 23 without loss. Sri Lankan women chasing 271 to win. South Africa scored 270 for 6 on the back of a brilliant century by Tasman Brits at the top of the order. 116 she made. Nadine de Klerk weighed in with a customary powerful knock at the end. 34 from just 22 balls. And runs also for Laura Wolfart, 41, and Annika Bosch, 39. Suno Luss made 22. So that's how things stand there. 0-0 between Sundowns and Cape Town Spurs, or Cape Town Spurs and Sundowns in the Cape. It is 0-0 there after 23 minutes. And 0-0 at Loftus between Bafana Bafana and Nigerian Ladies. Nigeria still leading 1-0 on aggregate. It's a match that's had a few chances. Nigeria have looked threatening on occasion. South Africa have had a few odd chances themselves, but fairly cagey affair as things stand at the moment. So 0-0, 1-0 to Nigeria as things stand on aggregate. But of course, there's no away goal rule in the competition. So if South Africa win 1-0, it would go to extra time and penalties. Let's get to the messages that have come through. So which country completes this list? Nigeria, Burundi, Botswana, Tunisia, Zambia, and one other country. This is what some of you have had to say. In terms of Jeff in Orlando West, he was the first one to send congratulations on our 250th show. Thank you very much, Jeff. He says the answer for today is Morocco. The countries mentioned were South Africa's opponents at the last women's AFCON, which we won in 2022. Nigeria, Burundi and Botswana in the group stage, Tunisia in the quarterfinals, Zambia in the semis and Morocco in the finals. So that's his answer. Do you agree with him or not? Then congrats to the Top Sport team led by Michael Abramson on their 250th edition of the program. That's from Kabeli Lichaba from Bloemanda in Bloemfontein. Thank you very, very much. Nice to hear from you as well. Then some other messages. Well, Mayibuya, I've read your message. He says my off stump, middle stump and leg stump are all on the floor on the quiz. Totally bamboozled by the quiz. So looking forward to the answer there. And then, as I said, he says, go Wednesday. We need a Sheffield derby next season in the championship. Yeah, it looks like Sheffield United are going to be relegated. So Sheffield Wednesday can stay up. As long as they lose tonight, I don't care. They can win all their remaining matches. That's absolutely fine. It's a nice logjam at the bottom of the table. So I just need Norwich to get into the playoffs and potentially play Ipswich in the playoff semi-final. That would be a thriller minute. Then Masik Polin Soshanguve says, I think it's Morocco. They were involved in qualifying for Lady Soccer Olympics in Paris. And then another message comes from Peter, who also answers Morocco. He says, all the teams reached the top 16 in the World Cup. So quickly the answer. That first message I read out was absolutely spot on from Jeff in Orlando West. He says, Morocco is the correct country. They are indeed Banyana's opponents in order. When they won WAFCON in 2022, the Women's African Cup of Nations, they beat Nigeria, Burundi, Botswana in the group stage, beat Tunisia in the quarterfinals, beat Zambia in the semis, and beat Morocco in the finals. They won all their matches in that tournament. So well done to Jeff in Orlando West. You have the most complete answer tonight.